If you really knew me, you'd know that I'm not always really serious. I meet people and they think because of the work I do that I'm like,
Always on.
hello, justice, like, hello, freedom. You know, that's like how I walk into the room. There's like a time and place for that. When we think about the work of activism, right, like some of it is the battle, but so much of it is also the joy, right? Like that, the joy has to be a part of the work.
Culture first.
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 Culture first. I'm your host, Damon Klotz, and you are listening to Culture First, a podcast where you'll hear stories about why being intentional about your company culture can create a better world of work. My guest for this episode of the Culture First podcast is DeRay McKesson. DeRay is a civil rights activist, community organizer, and host of Pod Save the People. He started his career as an educator and human capital leader, and has then gone on to co-found Campaign Zero. After the killing of Michael Brown by a police officer, DeRay marched on the streets of Ferguson, Missouri. It was marches like this that led to the birth of the Black Lives Matter movement. DeRay has become a key player in the work to confront the systems and structures that have led to mass incarceration and police killings of Black and other minority populations. DeRay is also a board member of Rock the Vote and was named one of the world's greatest leaders by Fortune magazine in 2015 and one of the 30 most influential people on the internet by Time magazine. You might also know DeRay for famously wearing a blue Patagonia vest. My full interview with DeRay is tagged in the show notes. But these particular moments from that conversation that are directly addressing the importance and challenges of activism in the workplace feel particularly relevant right now. In that full episode, you're also going to hear from CultureAmp CEO Didier Elzinger and his thoughts on the role of an organization in actively creating a better world and how leaders can support their employees to be activists in their community. All right, let's get started and head over to my conversation with DeRay McKesson.
If you really knew me, you'd know that I'm not always really serious. I meet people and they think because of the work I do that I'm like,
always on.
Hello, justice, like, hello, freedom. You know, that's like how I walk into the room. There's like a time and place for that. When we think about the work of activism, right, like some of it is the battle, but so much of it is also the joy, right? Like the joy has to be a part of the work. So when I was a chief human capital in the school system, I was tough. I think I was really fair. I was focused on systems, focused on scale. And I wanted you to like enjoy being at work, right? Like I get that if you had to choose, you probably wouldn't be here. And like, that makes sense to me. Like in the sense that like, if you could earn an income and not go to work, most people would choose that. But like while you're here, I wanted to be a place where like you grow and learn and we have fun and we all get challenged. Like I think those things are important to me. When I think about the workplaces where I've done my best, it's been places where like I was challenged and I was loved and I was pushed and I had fun, you know, like that was real to me. What I've realized is that there's a big difference between managing and I've been in places with a lot of leaders and not a lot of managers. There are people who like the vision's great, the like speech is great, the like foresight is really interesting. The ability to like make sure there's paper in the room on Monday is a nightmare, right? Just like the mechanisms of like managing people and time and resources and talent, not great. And I don't know why that. I don't know if we like glorify leadership too much and just like we don't help people understand the mechanics of what it means to manage. But I've seen that really limit incredibly gifted people from having the impact that they wanted to have, whether it was about workplace culture or even outcomes, you know? Mm-hmm. So when I think about the culture, there are a host of things around culture that I think are important. But the simplest is this idea that that values are things that we should like see, hear, feel, and touch, right? Like values are things that we should be evident. So when I see people's value statements and I go visit their company, if I have to like search for it, it's not a value. So if the value statement is like, I believe in communication and we believe in da-da, and if it is clear that like nobody's communicating, like that is not, that might be aspirational, but it's not like a lived value. Values are things that live. And I'm interested in the places where like the values don't yet live.
What motivates you to continue to be an activist?
I think we can win. Like that, it's that simple to me that I wouldn't do this if I thought, so I could do, just like most of us, I could do a ton of other things. But I do this because I think we can win. I think that we can win in our lifetime. I think that I'll be like 65 and I'll look back and be like, whew, that was really hard and we did it. But I really do think that we can win. And that like some of the things that we fight for, like we need to start fighting for in a way that like honors the fact that we can do it in this lifetime.
A lot of managers around the world are managing teams in quite hostile environments. Think about globally what's happening in the political systems. When we think about what's happening to different members of society, it's actually quite hard to manage a very diverse team and truly be able to show up for all of them. What advice do you have for managers looking to boost the psychological safety of the employees that they manage?
Yeah, I think that in my experience, managing teams, managing managers, and managing human capital, most senior leaders know. Whether they are like participating in knowing or not is one thing, whether they're acknowledging it is one thing, but like most people know when the culture is like awful or when like people really do get along or people don't like them because it was a tough decision or because they made a bad decision. Like people often know.
Yeah.
And the question is like, will people like respond to that knowledge or not? So when I think about this question of like, how do people lead in like tough places or tough times? I think that more people need to be like courageous and brave about sort of walking into like owning the fact that they might've made bad decisions. Sometimes having a tough conversation with people and saying like, I get it. I get you're frustrated. That makes sense to me. Here's where we are. And like the decision's not gonna change. Or letting other people like share space and power. So when I was a chief human capital, I was 31. I was the youngest chief in the history of the school system in Baltimore. Most of the people on the team were older than me. So from my age to 65, I managed. And it was like, I'm gonna be the chief tomorrow, right? We don't need to fight about power. I have the structural power, right? So like, I don't need to like lord it over you. That is wild. I don't need to do those things. And I can walk into the room and I want anybody to come in with the best idea. I want us to talk about it. Like, and that was a, like, how do I make sure that my ego is not driving, but my like focus on the work is driving, right? I think there are a lot of people for whom in the workplace, the ego is actually driving them. The like focus is not driving.
There's a book called Ego is the Enemy, which sort of played a really important role for me in terms of understanding how do I actually let whatever expectations I have about what I should be playing in this actually just sort of fall to the wayside and actually say the best way for me to serve myself is to serve others. Do you kind of see that as a way that you're trying to show up in your work?
Yeah, in the work of activism, for sure. I think when I was in the workplace, it was this question about like, what is the best thing that we can do? What is the best way to do it? And what's the best thing that we can do, right? Sometimes they were the same and sometimes they were not the same. So there'd be times when it was like, the best outcome is this. Given our capacity and resources, we can get really close to it, but we can't reach it. Like that was sometimes what it was and sometimes we could match it. And like that was my focus, you know, at work. I think in the work of activism, it is like I'm always focused on this idea of like, what is the world we deserve and how do we build it, right? And like, how do we get there? Who do we fight? How do we battle? How do we dream? Like, but it is about this acknowledgement that we think about the conditions of the world today as present but not permanent, right? Poverty is present. We don't think that's permanent. Hunger, present, not permanent. Criminal justice, like mass incarceration, present, not permanent, right? And when you start to think about the system as present but not permanent, the question becomes like, well, how do we make something better, you know?
What's that first step that we want to do to actually change it, knowing that we know that it can change?
Yeah, I think, and I don't say this cheesily, but I think the first step is really like the imagining process. You'd be shocked at how many people, when you say like, what is the workplace you want to work in? People actually haven't even like had that dream yet of like, oh, I want to work in a place that, like people know all the places they don't want to work, right? Like the what we don't want is actually like sort of an easy thing.
Yeah.
The what we want is much harder. So when you ask people like, what is the healthcare system you want? People actually have not been trained to dream about a world that they think they deserve. And it's not their fault, right? It's like one of the things, especially with poor people, and marginalized people is that you grow up and you know the constraints so well because you've had to know the constraints as a matter of survival, right? So you know how to stretch $10. You know how to like deal with the crazy boss who is sort of mean and maniacal and you just sort of figure it out because like you've had to maneuver in a place with a lot of constraints. And the question of the world we want to build, the world that we think we deserve, is one of saying, constraints aside, like what would we do, right? Like if there were not constraints, like what would be the world that we live in, right? And how do we normalize things that seem radical to people? So like, I think that we can live in a world where every kid eats breakfast, lunch, and dinner, not a radical idea, right? I think that we can work in workplaces where like everybody gets customized feedback. Like that should be like a still like radical, you know what I mean? That's what makes sports teams so great.
Yeah.
And sport teams model this idea of like every player, regardless of their talent, is always coached. Right. And like that makes sense. That should be the workplace. every employee, regardless of their talent, should be coached because we believe that feedback makes people great, right? Like, and those sort of things seem like really wild to people, especially at scale.
Right.
And how do we normalize them and like force systems and institutions to change? The world is run by people, right? And that like when people stop consuming or people stop consenting or whatever, like that actually like powers the world, right? Organizations have become these vessels for the way that people feel like they need to move through the world or like access capital or whatever, but like the people are the building block of what society looks like. When I think about the role of organizations, I think today what I'd say, which is different than when the protests began, I think that I'd say today that organizations have to fight to change structural things. And until the structure changes, like it doesn't matter at scale, right? So, you know, what does it mean that some of these tech companies do like volunteer days at shelters? Cute, right? Interesting, definitely helps people in the moment. After school programs help people in the moment, but it's like, what does it mean to actually change a public school system? That's a structural thing. What does it mean to invest? Like, organizations should use their power to do structural change because that's what will actually change the outcomes. Some of the program stuff is interesting. It'll help people's lives. So, like, this doesn't have to be an either or. It can be a both and. But there are a lot of organizations and corporations that sort of eschew their responsibility at the structural level, and they only operate at the program level.
So people who might be listening to this could be from any corner of the world. Is there a story that sort of you could share with someone that will help them see the world more through your eyes?
I don't know if it'll help them see the world through my eyes. I think that what is real is that anti-blackness is a global thing. I wouldn't even call it a phenomenon because it was intentional, but racism is real. You know, I spend most of my time on issues of policing. And in Baltimore, there was one morning I needed to go to the school. I like used to run an after school program at a school. And one morning I realized somebody had left something on the table at the school. So I had to go early. Like I'm riding through Baltimore and I'm sort of speeding. And I see a cop and the cop doesn't even pull me over, but I see him and I'm like definitely speeding. And I'm like, it's like the only car in the street. So I just pull myself over. I'm like, you know what? Give me a ticket. I gotta go. So he pulls me over, and I'll never forget, he comes to the car window with his gun drawn, and he's just, like, pissed. So all I can say to him is, like, it'll be okay. I'm like, it'll be okay. It's okay. It's okay. He's, like, screaming. The gun is pointed at me, and I'm like, it's okay.
And you're just saying those words to him.
Yeah, because I'm like, he need to go. Like, yeah. I guess I was afraid, but I was really like, oh my, I gotta go. Like, if he like calms down, I don't get a ticket, blah, blah, blah. And then it was my birthday. It was like around my birthday. My birthday was either like the day before. It wasn't my birthday, but it was like either the day before or day after. And he pulls up next to me as we drive away. He rolls his window down. I'm like, what could you possibly want now? You almost killed me. And he's like, happy birthday. And I'm like, we are not friends, right? But it was this moment that was like, I didn't do anything wrong. I pulled myself over. Like I did everything right, you know? And like, still you came to my window with your gun drawn, which was like a reminder of the risks that people face every day, regardless of like the choices they made. I was wearing like a hoodie, in some basketball shorts, you know, it was like 6 o'clock in the morning. But I think far too many people have stories like that.
You've said before that you're not gonna give talks for the rest of your life to actually win this. So what is some advice that you can give to any member of society who wants to sort of share that burden with you?
I'd say start where you are, follow your curiosity so that you actually know enough to be dangerous, and then ask every question you can. That like in my professional life as an activist for certain, I'm never afraid to ask the question because I like, I don't know, you know, and I'm okay being like, I have no clue. I literally didn't know that, never learned it, didn't see it. Like I'm okay with that. And that has helped me tremendously.
If this conversation has left you wanting more, the link to the full episode is in the show notes. I'm Damon Klotz, and the Culture First podcast is brought to you by the team here at CultureAmp, the world's leading employee experience platform. Learn more about CultureAmp by heading to cultureamp.com. We believe in creating a better world of work, and if that's important to you, please subscribe and leave us a review to make sure that you don't miss a single episode.